The views and opinions expressed here are those of the guests and are not the official position of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
I extol those who with loving care and compassionate concern feed the hungry, clothe the naked, and house the homeless. He who notes the sparrows fall will not be unmindful of such service.
The Mormon Channel now presents Faith in Action. Welcome to Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel, a show about welfare, humanitarian aid, and service around the world. Today we welcome M. Bruce Cox and Sister Linda Cox, who recently returned from serving in Mozambique. This is a country in southeastern Africa, bordered by the Indian Ocean to the east, Tanzania, is that right, to the north. All right. Welcome, Brother and Sister Cox.
Thank you very much.
So nice to have you here. Let me do a little background. The church was legally recognized in Mozambique in 1996. Looks like the missionaries arrived about 1999. So it took about 3 years before missionaries to arrive there.
Right.
But during that time, the church people in Mozambique benefited from church humanitarian aid. So this is not something that's new. The church has been going in there for quite a few years.
No, we've had missionaries there, senior couples directing the humanitarian effort since that time.
Mm-hmm.
We were just the last in a series of people to have been there.
Okay, I noticed that you're from Arizona, and I always like to ask sisters here, Sister Cox, when you open that envelope, is it like a manila envelope, or is it just a letter, or when you open that envelope and you see Mozambique, what is the first thing that comes into your mind?
Well, this time we were quite excited because we really were planning on going to Mozambique again.
Mm-hmm.
This is our second tour of a wonderful adventure.
So you've been to Mozambique. This was the second time.
Yes, correct.
Okay. Doing the same thing?
Our assignment was different,
mm-hmm.
but the people never change.
That's right. We'll talk about the assignment in just a moment. So, now, did you mention to me earlier this is your third mission?
Yes, it is.
And then the first was?
First was in Brazil. We served for a year and a half in Rio de Janeiro in the employment services office there,
mm-hmm.
helping people to find work.
Uh-huh.
Had a wonderful time, learned more about that program than I had ever known, and fell in love with it. So employment is a real soft spot in my heart, and we did enjoy it and learned a great deal there.
What a wide range, then, from Brazil to Mozambique. Two different worlds, basically.
Well, we were expecting to go back to Brazil in another calling. They had recruited us to go back to Recife. And when the call came and it said Mozambique, the first question was, where is that? And it was a little bit, a little frightening, I think, to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Going to Africa, there's a little bit of fear. But boy, I'll tell you, there's no need to be fearful of going to Africa. That is a wonderful part of the world to visit and to serve.
In my mind, when I see Mozambique, I see this arid, drought-stricken land and people kind of living in huts, and that's the first thing that comes to my mind. Is that not the case?
No.
Okay.
Although there is a vast variety of living conditions,
mm-hmm.
but most of where we served, the people had homes, very humble homes. They didn't have all the luxuries we have, which has proven to be quite a lesson to us in understanding and appreciating the blessings that we do have here in America. But the land in the areas we served was lush. There was lots of vegetation. Of course, close to the ocean, there was the humid weather.
Mm-hmm.
And many times you have to fight off some of the little the bugs that come in, and that's part of it too. But the people are survivors wherever they are. We've really learned to grow and admire all the things that they're able to do with the little bit that they do have.
Are they a nomadic people, or are they moving constantly, or they get into an area and just stay?
No, this is an area where people stay. They live. They If they have enough land, well, they're mostly subsistence farmers. Mm-hmm. The country is evolving rapidly. There's about 20 million people in Mozambique, a growth of over 5 million in the last 10 years. So there's been a great deal of growth. Mostly it's internal. 48% of the people are 14 years of age or under.
Wow.
Nearly half are under 15. And so it's a young country. Great deal of poverty, but not abject poverty. We never saw anybody starving.
Mm-hmm.
It's a country where people learn to get along without as much as we think they need. But they get along, and they're happy, a lot of happy people.
It's a commendable existence, isn't it, that we do with what we have. And is there much Western influence in Mozambique? Do they see television? Do they see movies? Do they see how the other half lives?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Oh, yes. The city of Maputo, which is the largest city in Mozambique, is about 1.5 million people, a city which is growing rapidly. Lots of people think they can find work if they come there, and there is very little. And so it's the outskirts around the city are being – and within the city itself are becoming more and more filled with poverty, people in real poverty. But somehow they subsist. They get things. They're survivors. They see supermarket in the middle of town, and some of them go there, but most of them don't. They live off from the things that they grow and that they can acquire individually in their whatever way they do. They don't use a lot of money.
Does the government offer any assistance to them? Is there any help from the government? I mean, you've got all of these 15 to 20-year-olds kind of, I see in my mind's eye, milling around this huge city. Is the government trying to help this situation?
They're trying to keep them in school. They try and keep the youth in schools, and they're doing a pretty good job. Their schooling, their educational system is on a scale of 1 to 10, it's about a 2.5.
Mm-hmm.
Their methods of teaching are very poor. I'll tell you what it is, and you tell me back what I just told you sort of thing. And so they don't teach people to solve problems. They don't teach people how to grow into situations. But at the same token, they're picking up on technology. In the city of Maputo, I would guess that half the people carry a cell phone.
Is that, I was interviewing someone a few days ago, and I don't remember what country. We've done so many, but I was just shocked that there would be so many cell phones in that country. Same here, Mozambique, with cell phones.
None of them can call out, because the calling plans are all based on what you call, not how many, what you receive.
Okay.
And so all of the cell phones in the companies have a procedure that says, please call me. Doesn't cost you anything to send that message. So we used to get lots of those little messages. Please call me. They have a little advertisement in that for their cell phone company and give us a phone number. So being the good kind of people, usually we would respond, and it gave us a chance then to communicate. And it gave them a way to communicate directly. So it's changed their lives to be able to call each other and to send little messages, lots of text messaging, because that's cheap.
Let's go back the first time then, Mozambique. You get off the airplane, and that first apartment that you go to, is it part of a mission home or is it part of a complex that the church owns? Where are you living?
Go ahead.
It was in an apartment. We've... depending on how the apartment is prepared to serve our needs, we found ourselves moving from one area to another at certain times. And also our responsibilities would change from one city to another, and we would find ourselves going out to another adventure.
Let's talk about those responsibilities. The first visit, what were you doing the first time in Mozambique? What was your charge?
We were called officially as proselyting missionaries. to do whatever the mission president wanted us to do.
Mm-hmm.
We were assigned in the city of Beira, which is the second largest city in the country, which is halfway, if you go north and south, it's midway from north to south. The church is only located in two major cities there. Maputo, which is the capital, which is right at the southern tip end of Mozambique, and Beira, which is halfway up. We were assigned there, and we worked with the organization. We had six branches there, and we worked with the members, with other the missionaries. We did some visits. We never initiated any visits on our own during our entire mission, but we went to quite a few visits with the young missionaries. They needed lots of help in teaching marriage. Marriage is not a big deal in mm-hmm. Mozambique, and since we could not baptize anyone who wasn't married, we worked a lot in that city on getting people married. We had to find the procedures, how to do it, and go through all each step that had to be done and determine what it cost and so forth. And we kind of had a little fund that we put together with our family to help some of these people get married, because it was a little bit costly for them. It cost them, $50 or $60 to get married. And
that's a lot of money.
Oh, it was. It was a significant amount. And so as we worked with it, we probably helped 15 couples, families, become families legally and lawfully married so that they could be baptized. And some of them now have gone to the temple. So we've seen some great changes in their lives as well.
You're listening to Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel. Today we're visiting with Brother and Sister Cox, who recently returned from a humanitarian mission in Mozambique, South Africa. Going back to the marriage thing, so there is not a stigma attached to not being married then in Mozambique?
No, there's not. They have traditional marriage, and they have the legal, lawful marriage. And their traditional marriage is sometimes they have a ceremony of their own, but it's just within the family. Two families get together, and they support one another, and they have a little ceremony, but there is nothing recorded anywhere about it. And so all they know is that this time they are married.
Mm-hmm. Are marriages predetermined? Is there a predestination of families kind of getting people together sometimes? Or?
Some are scheduled that way. Some are just when they find the right one, or they think they've found the right one. Marriages are not very firm and solid, and fidelity is not a big factor in the amongst most of the men there.
So the missionaries have their work cut out for them.
Oh, they do. Yeah. They do, yes.
Interesting.
And what fun it is to see when someone has really accepted it, and all of a sudden now they start to see the potential of an eternal marriage with a family, and they change. I remember the one couple in Beira that we visited with, and we worked with them for probably 6 months before we finally were able to get them married and baptized. Just visiting almost every week for a little while. The missionaries, the young missionaries, couldn't devote that much time to them over that period of time, but we were able to go out and visit with them each week and spend a little time, give them a little lesson, encourage them. And after they were baptized and were coming to church regularly, I remember asking Brother Matsinyi that day, as I actually asked his wife, I said, "Is there any difference in him now than before he started to learn about the church?" Oh, her eyes lit up, and she says, "Oh, yes. Now he comes home after work." and they didn't even have a family, but he had caught the vision that this was where he ought to be. And what a change in his life.
What a blessing the church is in their lives.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? The missionary, is there a language barrier? Are they speaking English? What language? Are there multi different languages in the country?
Oh, yes.
Portuguese.
Mm-hmm. Portuguese is the official language of Mozambique. Mm-hmm. It was settled by the Portuguese years ago, and in 1972 they liberated themselves from Portugal. But there are approximately, I'm going to guess, 50 to 75 other languages spoken in the country, all native dialects, and each area has two or three. And a lot of the people can speak two or three languages. Part of our problem is, oftentimes, that did not include Portuguese. Hmm. And so our young missionaries who were trying to teach, some of them were even learning a few of the of the dialects of words and things along so they could surprise them with a word or two. The only word I remember is Karimambo, which means thank you. And I think that was in two or three of the dialects. Mm. There are some of them somewhat related.
That's a good word to remember, isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah. Karimando?
Karimando.
Okay.
Yeah. Got to roll that R there.
Okay. What are the meeting houses like? We're talking branches. So do you have actual chapels or do you have a converted home or what? Where do you meet generally?
Most of the buildings are rented facilities. They are usually, they start out almost always in a home that we have modified so that it can handle a small branch. At the current time, there are six branches in the city of Maputo, and there are six in Beira. In Beira, we have two chapels now, constructed chapels. One of them is a stake center size. It's the first building that was built in Mozambique. Mm-hmm. Beautiful facility. They can seat 600 people for district conferences, and they've nearly filled it up a couple of times for conferences. They have just finished a second chapel in that city. I don't even know if they're in it or not. They're just finishing it up. When we saw it a couple or 3 weeks ago, I was very impressed that they had nearly finished the whole chapel. It's going to be a beautiful thing. In the district of Beira, there's also one other town, which is about 8 hours away from the city of Beira. It's a town called Marameo. Marameo is a sugar facility. They grow, the reason for the city being there, the town, it's about 60,000 people. The reason for it being there is that there's a sugar plantation with thousands of acres of sugar cane under cultivation and a mill where they process it. We have a beautiful chapel in that city as well, a constructed building.
You're listening to Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel. Today we're visiting with Brother and Sister Cox, who recently returned from a humanitarian mission in Mozambique. Okay, we talked about the proselyting mission. Now the second call comes, and it is for a humanitarian mission. Is that correct?
Correct. That
All
is
right.
correct.
And it's Tell been us a little bit about that.
Wonderful opportunity and in very many unique ways. The one of the favorite things that I felt like we really accomplished something was in working with the family poultry projects where a few families were selected to kind of test the idea and feeling of being able to find out how responsible they want to be if they were given some poultry. Could they perhaps care for them? And laying hens were the first thing that was added to this assignment. We were curious to know how they take care of the chickens and also how tempted they might be to want to eat them instead instead of allowing them to lay eggs. And it's interesting. As you work with people and learn to love them, you can see one of the great opportunities that the church gives to these people is to teach them how to serve one another. I never expected this to be an opportunity where they would be serving one another, but families needed support of other families. And we had six women, which, by the way, the women are, I hate to say this, the women were the stalwarts. They were the ones that accepted the responsibility and they are the ones that care for their families. And
let me just interject here. The women were selected. The program was set up to benefit single mothers or mm-hmm. or women who did not have men in their household
okay.
to
Correct.
Help to give them a source of income that might be of assistance to them. And so it's not all – we had some good men, too, in that organization, but they weren't in this project.
Mm-hmm.
This was a woman's project.
Correct. And it took some encouragement. It demanded some time on our part to watch and to encourage and to serve them and show them how it was to be done and watch them blossom into some marvelous ways of being able to care for their families.
Was it successful? Not completely. Not completely. No, we found that we lost chickens from somehow. We don't know how. They disappeared. We had designed some cages that could be locked up. They were metal cages, so they really couldn't get the chickens out. But we never put locks on them. And we had them, these ladies working together. We don't know if some of them were using them for other purposes or what. They never were able to save enough money to pay for new chickens, which happened you need to do after about a year.
So that concept escaped them somewhat.
Yeah, they couldn't see the future of it. Mm-hmm. We did have two families. Our branch, our former branch president in that branch was working with us, and he had lost his work and became an entrepreneur and said, I have a chicken coop out back. And so he was raising fryers and thought that if he could have one of these cages, if we could work it out and he could get 50 hens, that he could make it go. Well, he was. And he recently purchased 125 more chickens using his own money that he had saved for it and is seeing some real success with it. So we know that the concept can be done. But we don't think that these other people were invested in the program enough to make it theirs. So that's one of those things that in the evaluation we were able to point out that this needs to be done. Make it mine, not yours.
And it's probably generational somewhat. It's going to take one or two generations to get that vision to see where this all is going to take us at some point. So
yes, I'm sure of that.
Any other projects that you were involved in while you were
there? We were involved in two or three that were really quite interesting. One was a water project where we had wells drilled in the ground to provide communities with a safe source of water. One of these organizations was in the community of Beta. We had an organization there called Care for Life, which was running a program in several communities, six or eight communities, where they teach people how to set goals and achieve them. And what a difference it made in their lives. Well, one of the things that they needed was a way to raise gardens. And to do that, they had to have a better source of water than they had available there. Most of them had some small dip wells that would oftentimes go dry. And so we partnered with that organization. We put in 15 wells and one small electrical system in that community, in those various communities. And then to see the results, and when you go there to see them working those pumps for the first time or the second time, it's just thrilling to watch them get excited about it. And they go down and taste the water, and it tastes good, and it's clean water. It's all been proven to be good drinking water, as opposed to that dip well, which may have been, just a few hundred feet away from this, that's only 10 feet deep or 10 or 12 feet deep and gets everything in it. So we watched them. We did that project. We did two or three others. We left a project just beginning. It was another well drilling project. These are some of the church sponsors' clean water projects all around the world, and we were able to be involved with about four different projects of clean water. Great things.
Do they have a big party when that well is finally comes online?
Oh, boy,
everybody
do they.
Celebrates.
And... Oh, yes, and it's so much fun to see them sing and dance, and there's never any instrumental music. But the ladies sing, and they get out and dance, and they have fun.
You were talking about not enough electricity to run air conditioning in the chapel. So it's an infrastructure problem. They're still not really. How about roads and other things that we just take for granted?
There's a road from Maputo to Beta. We drove it when we got there on our first mission. The second day we were there, we were on the left-hand side of the road, dodging potholes. It looked like it was on this paved road. I could not believe that we were, where we were. I was wired as I drove that time, and it was such a stressing thing. Since then, when we came back the second time, we went halfway on that same road and found it to have been almost all redone. And so we said, oh, what a wonderful thing. They are making major improvements. They recently opened a brand new bridge across the Zambezi River. It's a multi-million dollar bridge that they had to put in. Until then, getting across the river would take sometimes 2, 3, 4 days because of the ferries, and they had to do this. The trucks would line up to get across. They could take one truck at a time each direction, and it'd take them 2 or 3 days. Now they can drive across it, and so the traffic north and south and the communication is going to be improved dramatically. In the cities, when it rains, it washes out all the potholes, and they have lots of problems. Mm-hmm. But things are improving. We saw lots of improvements along the way, you know, over the first time that we were there. And so they're trying.
So there is a taxing authority. There is some government that's trying to make things better for them.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
And is it a steep tax for those who have, as opposed to the have-nots?
Yeah, the have-nots don't pay anything.
Don't.
So. And so they... They try to get everybody who has to pay everything they can, and lots of high import duties and export duties and things of this sort, because those are the people who are passing money along.
And most of the improvements show up just shortly before an election.
Yeah.
One of those deals.
Yes.
Okay. I'm just looking at some church statistics. It's the last number I had here had 4,800 members in Mozambique. It had 18 congregations. And one mission there. So the church is growing since 1999.
Yes, it has grown quite a bit. We have had a lot of baptisms. Interestingly, the last thing they said, well, we've baptized enough for another double the number of branches we've got, but we still have the same number of people coming to church. So they're working a great deal on inviting people back.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like when we invite them, a lot of them come.
Well, and it would appear there's a lot of obstacles also as you're baptized then to come back to church.
Yes.
And to become so that there's a lot of things to overcome.
Well, transportation is such a big thing. If they don't live relatively close to one of the meeting houses, mm-hmm. it's hard for them to come.
Is church an all-day affair because of the distance you travel? I know in some countries they'll have lunch there and they'll have parties or something after church. Is that the case in Mozambique, or is it?
Not that we're aware of.
Mm-hmm. We never attended any meals or anything.
But if there were occasions, yeah. I suppose that they, you know, they take advantage of that opportunity of being together and not have to walk them several miles back to church again.
Well, the branch we spent most of our time with this last time, when it came our time to leave, well, nothing had happened, and they called a special meeting to pay tribute to Elder and Sister Cox Sunday afternoon, an hour after the church was over, and then they invited everybody to hang around, and we had a meeting that we got way more tribute than we deserved for anything, but we really had learned to love that branch a lot. So,
Sister Cox, one of the first things you said when we sat down was that it was a safe place. You never felt threatened, and yet we go back to probably one of the big stories of Elder Russell M. Nelson and his wife Wendy attacked while in Mozambique. Is that just something that's just out of the ordinary for this country?
Absolutely. It was a surprise to us. We were involved with the situation after it occurred, and of course the details have been repeated several times, I'm sure, in different conversations, but it's important to be cautious, and the missionaries are always told how to take care of themselves, what to watch for. Quite honestly, we had a few episodes ourselves where you have to just be careful and not take for granted your safety. Make sure things are locked up. People look for opportunities and thinking that if it's not locked up, it's theirs to take if they wish. And because of the situation where they do not have a lot of things, and they see Americans or white people as having more than them, they feel like, well, they can always buy another one. So they will take what's available if the opportunity arises. So, but in the same sense, we were mingling a lot with the members of the church, and we have been able to see as they learn and grow and understand the principles of the gospel, they're becoming better people. We have felt that. They're improving in ways that only the gospel can help in assisting them to do that.
It kind of sounds like in the country, the rule is there's no rules. And so you're having to overcome all of this just a little step at a time now through the missionary program and through membership in the church.
Yes.
You know, what can you say? Yeah. You know, of course, without you can see the way the church is. It's there for a purpose. It's the Lord's work, and He directs it, and you can see that He's in charge, and you have, all of us have been able to witness little miracles and big miracles as the gospel is taught to these dear people.
How about a miracle from each of you, your favorite story, your favorite, something you remember that just really touched you, and as you look back on your missions in Mozambique, the proselyting mission and the humanitarian mission, what stands out for you?
We had several experiences where the right people were at the right place, which always seemed to be just above and beyond what you really expected. We were doing what we call a neonatal resuscitation training session in the country of Angola. Our mission also included the country of Angola, which is on the opposite side of Africa, nearly the same position, but just straight west there. Angola has been a difficult place. We have not had missionaries there until just recently. We've only got four there in the whole country now. But we were there, and this was the second time that we had been teaching. They had received this neonatal resuscitation training. Dr. Petty and his wife were the ones who gave it the first time 3 years prior to 2009. And when we went over this time, they had all kinds of problems trying to get anybody to accept their presence or to help out or do anything. But this time when we got there, we walked right in and had an appointment with the minister, the actual minister of health. And he had been involved at the closing ceremonies 3 years earlier and had seen what had been offered. And this time, his word was, do whatever they need to have done and make sure it turns out well. Well, the final results were we had approximately 1,000 people who received the training in at least four major population centers in Angola. And it's going to make a major difference in their infant mortality rate. And he saw that and understood it and said, whatever they need to have, you make sure it gets done. And so all of a sudden things just opened up. And it was a real miracle to see how well it happened after we had the right person primed for it.
The Lord has His time and His way of getting things done.
Oh, yes.
For certain. Sister Cox, anything?
Well, I have a soft heart for one of our wonderful branches, and that's, the branch is called T3. And we kind of adopted this branch over the time that we spent in this last mission. It's in an area where water is needed and oftentimes not available. The branch building had water that was hooked up by the...
to the community water system.
Yeah, the community water system. But oftentimes there was no water in the faucet. And of course, without water, if we wanted to have a project such as gardening or raising the chickens in that particular area, well, it was a real problem. And it just happened that at the right time, there were those that were involved that located a well rigging company that happened to have some free time on their hand and offered a wonderful price to be able to dig a well in this right on the property. And because of that, the area now has flourished around the church property. And the sisters, the women, the men are taking sections of the property and planting vegetables that they're so proud of. They can see things growing. They're excited about seeing that there really is hope, and they can do wonderful things right there on the property that was not available before because the water was not there to do so. The sand now has provided plants that we would never have imagined. You know, the desert is truly blossoming like a rose in Africa.
What a great blessing that is. You've been listening to Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel. We're visiting today with Brother and Sister Cox, who recently returned from a humanitarian mission in Mozambique, South Africa. This is Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel. Thank you for coming by.